tell stories so grand of this vast, timeless land, and they call it Sunday with Macca.
Many pigs out there?
Yeah, there's a lot. Just in our local area, we do helicopter shoots. We've done three or four in the last probably 12, 18 months, and normally over sort of a 4 or 5 day period, we'll get, you know, 1,800 to 2,000 pigs.
God help me.
Yeah, it's just constant. They're destroying the crops and the fences. And
destroying everything. I just think of like little quails, because I love little quails, I don't know why, and they nest in the grass. Well, the pigs just trample them and their eggs, and there's no chance for anything. We should have been doing this years ago, but I suppose they're good seasons. They're wily things, aren't they, pigs, mate?
Oh, and they're getting more and more cunning. Like they've sussed out traps, and they know what a chopper sounds like. So they all just keep their head down, nothing pokes their nose out, literally, and they breed like rabbits.
No, they breed like people. People.
Well, that could be the case.
If you had a wet there in Broome, really, this year?
Not much, Macca. It's been the statistics came in. It's been the second driest wet we've had ever.
Really?
Yeah.
And yet a little further north, they've had a lot of rain, haven't they?
Oh, look, we think that for particularly the West Kimberley, that our wet season went to Queensland for a holiday. Yes.
The city, the scrub, and the farmer in the pub, they love it all over Australia. There's a radio show that Australians all know. If you're rich or you ain't got a cracker, they tell stories so grand of this vast, timeless land, and they call it Sunday with Macca. They all call it Sunday with Macca. Yeah, they all call it Sunday with Macca. Get on with it, Macca.
I will. That's the thing. Our environment. How's the environment doing? Yeah, how's the... Really? Pigs... Bone seed, feral pigs, feral deer, all sorts of things. Plants, the environment, the poor old environment. Cops it sweet. Morning, Ian says, Ruth, that's right. Morning, Ruth. Thanks for program. Wondering if you'd like to hear my story of vanilla slices. My husband and I pulled into Wongan Hills Bakery. You'll find Wongan Hills on your map. Wongan Hills Bakery on our way back from a trip through the West Australian wheat belt, a great state and beyond. We were hanging out for a vanilla slice or something tasty for lunch. It's angle parking and most farmers had white Land Cruiser utes there. Yeah. We had filled up with diesel and after lunch we were making our way south to our farm in southwest Busselton. My husband went off to get the paper and I went to the bakery. Parking was filling up, but angle parking is great. I returned to the ute, got in, balancing my vanilla slices and a loaf of bread. I said something like, "Wow, what a great bakery." A deep voice said, "Thanks, love. I'm not your husband, but you can leave the vanilla slice if you like." More blushing from me. I apologised profusely and got out. Wrong ute. So embarrassed. But hey, we can laugh at such things and enjoy the friendliness of the country. And yes, our white ute was three vehicles along. Have a great day. Well done, Ruthie. Yes, you can't beat a lovely vanilla slice or a cream horn or... Oh, dear. There used to be this... I've told you before. There used to be this shop near me... Well, not near me. Across the other side of the city. And it was old-fashioned. Sold the things that you used to get years ago. Cream buns and cream horns with... mock cream made properly with sugar and butter, and they were just delightful. You just can't get them. I don't like continental cakes at all. Continental cake. I like French, but basically, yep. Agree about daylight savings, says Helen. Even though we're in a heat wave down here, soon we will be back in the morning dark with heating. No one takes advantage of after school and work activities. Now we have work from home. Helen Geelong. There was a story in the All Over News from somebody saying that, you know, the benefits for certainly for Adelaide and probably Geelong and Canberra and New South Wales are long gone. So why we persist with it for 6 months, I don't know. I can understand it. If you like it for, say, December, January and February, or even November, December, January and February. But the other 2 months, it's ridiculous. But it all happened because Tasmania changed, because they're in Tasmania. And they said, oh, we'll have it for 6 months. So some little bright spark, probably in the public service in New South Wales, said, oh, well, we go sailing on Wednesday afternoon, so that'll help us. It'll be great. So that's why we've got it for 6 months. And I think Radio National, the ABC's Radio National, did a thing and said it, in fact, costs money. It's dearer. But anyway, who knows? Our number this morning is 1300 700 222. This morning on the program already, Sue rang about country shows. Lots of country shows on, certainly in New South Wales and some in Victoria. But quite a few things are cancelled in Victoria. What was cancelled? The Yarram District Canine Club have cancelled. Is it the Berrydale? Was it Berrydale? No, what show was cancelled, Kelvin? The Moomba Parade's been cancelled because of the heatwave conditions. I didn't hear that. That intercom, see, we have a little intercom here between myself and the out of control room, and it sort of invariably doesn't work. But it hasn't worked for 20 years, has it, Kel? But anyway, that's... But so a lot of things are cancelled. So if you're going to go to something and you're in... it'd probably be wise to maybe ring and see if your event's still on, because there's been a lot of hot weather, heat wave conditions. The Moomba Parade has been cancelled. Not Moomba, but the parade has been cancelled. Because hot weather will probably continue tomorrow and maybe till Tuesday, Adelaide and Victoria. What else is going to say? Doesn't matter. 1300 700 222. That's our number. G'day, this is Macca. Where are you, Julie?
I'm in Terrigal, Macca.
Mm-hmm. What are you up to?
Oh, my God. I've just... I went for my early morning walk and set off at 5. But in trying to come back to this place where I'm staying, I got caught up in all the one-way streets, and I've been walking up and down so many hills, I'm totally exhausted.
Well, that'll happen. What time did you get up?
I guess it was probably about 4:45, and I started at 5, but we've come up here for, I guess, an old bag's 60th birthday weekend, three of us are turning 60, so old friends for, I guess, close to 35, 40 years, we've got together, and just now I'm looking out over the Pacific, it's just absolutely beautiful, and I'm at the top of the hill.
Isn't it lovely? I wouldn't describe as being 60, it's being old, Jules, but anyway.
Oh, that's very nice of you. I'm feeling very old at the moment.
Yeah, well, you see, the walking will do that to you, especially up hills and down dales. Do you do this every morning? Do you walk all the time?
Yeah, no, I do. I walk wherever I go. I actually really love it when I'm in somewhere new, because I try not to use my phone at all to look at maps and just get to explore places and get lost and that sort of stuff. Some days when it's not so hilly, it's okay.
Yeah, I'll say. And you're at Terrigal in central New South Wales, Central Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
And you live there, that's your home? You've lived there all your life?
No. I live in Sydney. I guess a group of us that I guess met playing basketball at university probably 40 years ago, and two of us still play, the two of us that are turning 60, so, yeah.
Well, there you go, see? How old can you be if you're still playing basketball at 60? My God.
Well, it's not necessarily too much of the quality in there. It's just a social comp, but it's fun.
Yeah, well, exactly, and good for your fitness.
Yeah.
All right, Jules. Anything else to report?
No, that's about it. It's looking beautiful. I'm looking over. I wish I had my dive gear here, because I'm looking over. They have a wreck apparently out that they've sunk here, and I'd love to dive it. Although I wish the water. I know it's terrible for global warming. I'm just a bit of a sook when it comes to cold water.
And I'd love to do that. I've thought about it often. So you go diving on wrecks and just generally?
Yeah, I've actually rung you before because I go a lot up to New Guinea. And I think once you were wondering about where the La Reunion weather station was, and I'd rung it and talked to you about it.
Oh, that's right.
And then I'd rung you after I'd come back for a dive trip to New Guinea.
Oh, yeah, I'd love. Yeah, that sounded fabulous. New Britain or somewhere you went to, didn't you?
That's right, yeah. And actually going again at the end of the month, so looking forward to it.
And how long have you been doing that?
Oh, gosh, I guess I've been diving for about 30 years. So, yeah, and we've been going up to New Guinea pretty much every year except for COVID, obviously. And they're just the most... We're so lucky to have such an amazing place so close to Australia.
And how did you start that, like going diving? Because it's not something that would be... on my list of things to do when I was young. All I did was play cricket, I suppose, as a young kid, and go to school and go to uni. But how did you start? What was the impetus?
I think in my first job, I went overseas to Mexico, and I was with some guy. Ended up with being with some people, and we, interestingly enough, I don't know how this happened, but there was a hurricane that was there, and we helped build houses out of, like, this disgusting coal tar paper that for the people to actually live in. And then we'd go diving at the end of it. And I hadn't really dived before. So when I came back to Sydney, I did a diving course. And then I luckily went and worked in northwest of Western Australia and had fantastic diving there. And went and lived in London, became a dive instructor in London, strangely enough. And then come back to Australia. But now I'm a complete wuss and I tend to only dive in tropical waters.
It's look, I don't know anything about it, but it just seems to me it would be another world, a bit like taking off in a plane and all of a sudden you've left your earthly world behind.
You're quite right, because what you see down there is nothing like what you see normally in everyday life. And it's just, it's just beautiful. You know, sometimes it's pretty horrible. I mean, at the moment we're having a lot of coral bleaching up in the Barrier Reef, and it's just sad to see that happen continuously, because it just can't take it when it's relentless. And they haven't had sort of so many severe bleaching episodes in a relatively short period of time. We do a lot of work up at Lizard Island Research Station, and they're having a really bad episode this year. So, it's sort of really sad. And I know for the directors that have been there for, the 50 years the station's been operating, but the directors are about to retire after 30 or 40 years there. And, it's just sad. You know, they've put their heart and soul into that, and they, it's an amazing, amazing place.
Yeah, I'll have to go diving sometime, but I'll probably start with a snorkel, I think.
In actual fact, I do a lot more snorkeling these days because it's just much better exercise.
Right. Good on you, Julie.
No worries. Nice to talk to you.
And have a happy birthday, you girls.
Thank you.
Okay. See ya.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Simon's in Murrumbateman. Morning, Simon.
G'day, Ian. How are you?
Fabulous.
That's the way. 16 degrees here. The magpies are moving. Sun's just coming up. Don't know about this daylight saving. You look down the valley, everybody's got their lights on, so I don't know what we're saving.
Exactly.
I think they should have cracked it off on the 1st of autumn. But anyway, everybody's entitled to an opinion.
I met
you a few years ago, a couple of things. I'm just getting in a 1963 B Model Mac and heading to the Harden Truck Show this morning.
Oh, wow. There'll be a big crowd there?
Well, it's a great thing, you know, and it's one of the great things about the collectors and the people who've got these vehicles now is the fact that, the concessional registration has allowed a lot of this these beautiful old trucks and cars and vehicles to stay on the road, instead of going to the crusher, because it's a great scheme, and most states have got a concessional registration thing now, so it's a cheaper registration, and you're entitled to, say, 60 trips a year to club events and things. But it'll be great over there. It's a great place, and they have it at the showground at Harden. And
what's your truck?
It's a B Model Mac, 1963 B Model Mac.
And you used to drive that, or you just bought it to do it up?
No. I had it years ago at St. George. I was at St. George for many years. You often talk to David Blackett up there at River Sands. Well, I was 35 years up at St. George, so that's where I operated the truck. But I'm back down here where I originally came from. Mm-hmm. And the other thing worth mentioning, you mentioned the dog trials. We're involved with the sheepdog trials at Hall, which start tomorrow. Culminate with the dog's dinner next Saturday night. You should come along to the dog's dinner again.
The dog's dinner. I went there one year, didn't I?
You did. Yeah, probably. I didn't go to the dog's dinner.
I think I just went to dinner one night there, I think. I don't think I went to the dog's dinner. Saturday night's a bit hairy for me because I'd got to get home.
I can imagine, yeah, especially if you sit on my table at the dog's dinner, you probably wouldn't be doing a broadcast in the morning.
But, well, I'll try and get down there because there's people from all over there. It's their national dog trials and people who own dogs. I remember I met a bloke from high up in the mountains. He was really interesting to talk to, but you get all sorts of people. It's like I was at the trots last night at Menangle for the Miracle Mile, and there's people from all over the place.
Did you back a slow one?
No, I backed my one came second, which was all right. Well, it's fine. I only put $10 on it, so that's all right.
Oh, Good on you. No, it's a great thing that dog trials, they come from all over, and my father was involved in it many years ago. He's been gone 50 years next year, but we're only in a sponsorship role there. But it's a great thing, and to meet those people that come up from all over and what they do with those dogs, you've seen it. But if you can get down again, they would absolutely love to see you there.
Well, I might see you there, Simon.
Yeah, you might do. All right. Okay, take care and keep up the good work. Enjoy your program.
Thanks, mate. Good on you. Larry's in Warrigal. Is that right, Larry?
Yeah, that's right, Mega. How you going?
Yeah, good, mate.
That's a shot. I'm heading down to be one of the judges at the West Gippsland Stock Horse Branch show today. So it's going to be a very hot day. They're talking 38, 39 degrees.
Yes.
So hopefully we get away early. We can get most of it done by lunchtime and people can get home.
So tell us about, what is it, the West Gippsland Stock Horse Show? Is that it?
That's right, yep. Yeah, it's a branch show. So there's people there have come from over near the South Australian border and up near the Murray River and travelled 5-6 hours to get here. So they thought it wasn't a good idea to call it off and send them home again. So we're just going to go ahead with the show.
Well, good on you. Yeah, the warm weather. So I always find March can be really hot. And because our weather's, you know, like our winter, spring, you know, summer, autumn, they're really northern hemisphere constructs, aren't they? And you always find that our summer goes longer than February. I mean, summer's supposed to be December, January, February, but it usually extends much longer than February, all the way through March. I always find one of the coolest days is Anzac Day. It starts to get cool around Anzac Day. Not always, but often.
We had a very, very, like, we had a really hot, dry September, and then we've had over 100 mil of rain every month since until the end of January, and then February came out really hot.
Yeah.
And, of course, the long, dry grass then dried out, so the fear of fire down here at the moment with so much long, dry grass, and, you know, we've got 3 days now going to be 38 degrees plus, and they're talking strong winds tomorrow, so everyone's on high fire alert.
And I suppose, what do you, can you, you know, they talk about, you know, control burning. I suppose you can't burn grass, can you, really? And it depends on the days and the times. And what you need a lot of people watching a control burn like that, I suppose, don't you?
Maggie, forget about control burning. What we need to do is get back to control grazing.
Yeah.
And you put cattle up, you know, in a lot of this bush country or sheep and graze it out in the springtime and early summer, and you don't have the long, dry grass. You actually cure a lot of problems. The burning's good in autumn going into the winter at the end of summer, but you would never want to light a fire up prior summer.
No,
because you just never put it out, mate.
Oh, I thought so. So, and have you got stock horses, Larry?
Yeah, I breed. My family go back to the 1800s breeding horses, and so I'm one of those tragics that's always broke and got horses. And so, yeah, I breed a few, and I don't compete anymore. I've played polo cross, and I camp drafted and rode a few bouncy ones for a while. But
how long's a piece of string? But how much does a stock horse cost if you wanted to buy yourself a stock horse, Larry? I suppose any price, is it?
If you can ride and you can do a lot of the work yourself, like as far as education goes, you'll pick up a nice gelding for, say, around the $5,000 mark.
Mm.
And then as a just broken in horse, and then educate them yourself. If you're looking for a really well-bred mare that's educated and going really well, that's, you know, $30,000 to $50,000.
Gee.
And the sale that they recently had up at Tamworth, the Nutrien sale up there, you know, there were horses made over $100,000 that were,
wow,
Australian stock horses, working horses, you know, but they're specialist breeding for camp drafting. And you know, there's so much money now at the top end of camp drafting that people are prepared to pay yeah, really, really good money for a chance to go out and try and win it.
And is it like everything else in the world that you try and buy something, the inflation's hit the stock horse industry too, the prices have gone up by thousands of dollars in the last, 12 to 18 months?
No, I wouldn't say the last 12 to 18 months. In fact, probably it came back a little bit because I think money's a bit tighter. But back there where, cattle prices got right up there, we were hitting record prices there 3 years ago with cattle, and some of the big pastoral companies in Queensland that had made a lot of money with cattle, they can go and buy a $100,000 workhorse and write it off on the tax. So that's a bit of an advantage. But 90% of the people that have got stock horses are tradesmen. They're plumbers, they're sparkies, they're school teachers, they're nurses. They're not all pastoral people anymore.
Yeah.
And those people want fully educated, well-bred horses, and they've got a bit of money behind them that they can pay to buy that horse.
Yeah, the world's changed, hasn't it? I'll say. Some people got lots of money, Larry. But have a good.
Some of us haven't.
Yeah, but, some of us haven't. Have a good time at the West. Whereabouts in West Gippsland is it?
It's at Cannibal Creek today, near Garfield. So Cannibal Creek Reserve near Garfield.
All right. I'll meet you sometime, Larry. Good on you, mate. Thank you.
No worries, Mac. I'd love to catch up one day, mate.
Thanks,
cheers,
mate. Bye.
Peter here.
Hi, Peter.
Yeah, you wanted to talk to a speleologist?
No, I didn't, but I mentioned we're going to talk about speleology, but I'll talk to a spele. I'll talk to anyone, Pete, mostly. What's the deal?
Yeah, well, I'm a caver speleologist. I actually coordinate the numbering and documentation of cave and calf features across Australia.
Right. And where are you, Pete?
Well, I'm at Oberon. I own a little bit of cave area called Trickett's Arch. Right at the moment, I've actually got my fellow counterpart from South Australia here. And the two of us work on our national cast database called AusCast. And we're tidying it up, adding more data. We'd be getting it ready for a big fight over the Western Nullarbor at present moment.
A big flight, did you say, or a fight?
Yeah, a big fight, conservation battle over the Western Nullarbor, you know.
Right. What's that about?
Well, Andrew Forrest and a number of big consortiums want to build a hydrogen plant on the western part of the Nullarbor Plain.
All right.
And basically trash what an area that our federation, the Australian Speleological Federation, has nominated three times for World Heritage listing. It contains some of the most spectacular caves in Australia, some very long caves, lots of Aboriginal sites and artefacts. Going to build a whole big plant, solar and battery farm to produce hydrogen, not for use in Australia, but to export it, basically. I suppose we're getting ready to fight. Fight the good fight, yeah. It's
interesting, isn't it? The rush to renewables and saving the planet, and in the process, the environment goes out the window. Like, the environment seems to me to be covered with, and increasingly, poles and wires, wind factories, and acres and acres of solar panels. And so the environment, and now you're talking about, caves and what's going to happen to them. So saving the planet, the environment, I don't know.
Well, in part, that's because we've never really understood why the planet's warming. The production of CO2 is just on one side of what they call the oxygen-carbon cycle. And, you know, one side is the oxygen side, which is the trees, the coral reefs, the algal forests in the sea, and they take in the CO2 and turn it into basically stored carbon. And on the other side is, you know, industry and man, animals producing the CO2.
Mm. Now,
one side, the CO2 side, we're paying trillions and trillions of dollars. On the other side of the equation, which is people looking after our land-based and sea-based carbon sinks, you know, we're all in the sewer and the gutter with a begging bowl out and been told basically to go F ourselves.
Mm.
And, you know, there's absolutely no money. And what a lot of people might not be aware of is that most of the money is going on big biz to literally continue the trashing of the planet. And we're going to get nowhere while the land clearing is going gangbusters all around the globe. Old growth forests have been trashed. And supposedly everything's going to be right if we simply build all these solar battery farms and wind towers. And
yeah,
I can't see it. I'm not a climate denier, but you know, there's you can't get any money if you know. I've got a place, a trick of charge, 145 hectare property. I had a conservation agreement, haven't got a cent to look or manage it. And the same is with national parks and other people trying to look after the environment. We're all out with begging bowls.
Pete, tell me, sometime I'd like to talk to you about it. I've got to leave soon for the news. And thanks for your call. I'd like to talk to you sometime about speleology and caving and your mate from South Australia. So I'll give you, are you around for a while, you know, in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah.
I'll give you a ring and you can tell me why you go caving and what it is, what it does for you. I couldn't stand
it. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
It's like being in a submarine to me. I get claustrophobia. But anyway, you can tell me more about that. But thanks for your call, Pete, and good luck with that. I'm a bit with you on all those things. Good on you.
Talk to you soon.
See you, mate.
Top of the morning to you, Macca.
Hi.
It's Simon here from Pottsville, and just about to head up to Talabudra for my son to weigh in. That he's fighting in the National Muay Thai Championships on the Gold Coast today.
Muay Thai Championships, that's what is that?
It's kickboxing.
Oh, ouch, ouch. Okay, how old's your son?
He's 19.
Wow, and how long's he been doing this kickboxing?
Well, he's been training for this for about 12 months, but intensively for a couple of weeks.
Mm.
And yesterday he fought an opponent from Western Australia to progress through to the finals today.
I see. Well, that's a big deal, isn't it? And is this an Olympic sport too, or no?
No, I don't think it is. But it's quite a big deal. Obviously, there's fighters from all around Australia fighting there today, and his opponent is a little bit shorter than him today, but he's got nice hands. He's a boxer and a redhead too, so he's gonna go hard, I reckon.
So in kickboxing, you don't just kick, you punch as well.
Yeah, it's everything: legs, arms, elbows, knees.
The full Monty.
It's brutal.
dear, oh dear. So, were you involved in any sort of fisticuffs, Simon? Yourself? Did you?
I won my last fight by 150 metres.
So he wasn't taking after his father when he started kickboxing?
Well, not so much. We're a surf life saving family, and he was a very good Ironman before he gave that up and took up Muay Thai. And it's kept him fit. You know, he can last the whole, you know, there's three-minute rounds in Muay Thai. And he's able to, you know, maintain his stamina. Surf life saving has just given him such a good base.
Yeah, and these kickboxing champs are on in Talabudra, is that right?
Yes, Talabudra Recreation Centre, $25 a ticket, and you'll get a really good show.
Can you get, I mean, you got a lot of protection in kickboxing? What's the story?
Yes, this the national championships they do, they've got headgear and a bodysuit, elbow pads, gloves, and shin guards.
Mm.
But that doesn't stop you from getting knocked out when it's full body contact. They, yeah, they're very fit, strong athletes, or men and women fighting.
Or as Dean Martin sang in that fabulous song, "Ain't That a Kick in the Head?"
yeah, well, there's going to be a few of that.
Well, that's not very nice. Just makes me cringe when I think about it. But and this is originated in Thailand. Is that right?
That's right. Mm. That's right. And I believe a lot of the champions that win it at the nationals will go over to Thailand and fight over there.
So, does he get? What's your son's name?
Cooper Tate.
Cooper Tate. Does he get injured? What's the deal there?
Yesterday, yeah, he did. He hurt his foot during that battle.
Do they wear shoes or some sort of slippers? Or?
It's like a shin guard that goes over the top of the foot.
Mm.
But yeah, it's brutal.
And is this what's the next step? Is going into that cage fighting and stuff? Is
it well? Well, look, let's not talk about that. His mother's probably listening now and she's not going to be very pleased about that, but we'll see where he wants to go with it.
So I suppose you can make money in cage fighting, but not so much in kickboxing. Is that the story or what's the story?
Yeah, that's right. Most of the boys will sort of use it as a stepping stone and they will train in a number of different martial arts to try and get the edge over their opponent.
Mm. Oh, well.
Mm. But I've got one more thing. New South Wales State Surf Life Saving Championships are on this coming weekend, and my daughter's competing down at that as well. So we've got a bit on.
Where's that at?
That's going to be at Queenscliff.
That's what, this weekend or next weekend?
Yeah, next weekend. So we're heading down Wednesday.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm a bit with. Cooper's mother, actually.
She'll be pleased to hear that.
Anyway, thanks for telling us about it. There's lots of things on, and it's interesting to know what people are doing and what gets them off. We've been talking about horses this morning and dogs, and yeah, it's all the interesting things we do, isn't it?
You cover a fair few bases, don't you, Macca?
Yeah, well, you do, and it's interesting to find out what. Because you don't hear a lot about kickboxing, but so it's the national championships today in Talabudra, and people can go along there and have a look if they want.
You betcha.
Whereabouts in Talabudra is it?
It's the Talabudra Recreation Centre. It's an amazing facility. It's the first time I've been there, but it's really impressive.
All right. Good on you, mate. Nice to talk to you. Good luck.
Thanks, Macca.
Good luck to Cooper.
Good on you, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye. This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News. I eat a lot of fruit and vegetables. Not heaps, but I eat it all the time. I love it, especially fruit. And we've talked about it over the years. I remember my friend Robert Borlase wrote to me and talked to me about tomatoes, how hard they were. He used to call them bull tomatoes. And he also said, "Where does the good fruit go, Ian?" This from Helen Hannigan. She says, "Ian, only a few years ago when mango season arrived, we could smell the mangoes as we walked into the fruit shop. These days, it's all Calypso mangoes, small size, no aroma. And what happened to the large red delicious apples and large green sweet Granny Smith apples? Apples these days are all the same size with very little flavour. And now there are flat peaches designed for lunchboxes." I don't know what flat peaches are, but anyway, thank you, Helen. But what about strawberries? I haven't had a decent tasting strawberry, a strawberry that tastes like a strawberry for a couple of years. Maybe it's the seasons, I don't know. Where does the good fruit go? And while we're talking of horticulture, this from Rod Holcomb. He says, "Writing as a semi-retired horticulturalist, a prize-winning garden designer, and author of A Guide to the Regeneration of the Australian Bush, I'll comment on the modern approach to the most complex field of all, that is, the field of horticulture.
No other field is divided into so many subgroups as horticulture. Viticulture, cotton, wheat, barley, canola, stone fruit, ginger, chocolate, coffee, etc. The list goes on and on. I call myself a master of horticulture, says Rod, which doesn't mean that I can grow any plant anywhere at any time. It means that I can work out how to grow any plant. That may mean telling you not to bother here with that plant. It won't grow. For instance, that hazelnut farm that closed down recently near Narandra, they were incredibly poorly advised. Hazelnuts are an understory shrub from a cool environment. They need eastern tall country in the ranges in a sheltered valley. Part of growing them is creating the shelter. For instance, 20 years ago, I was paid to set up a plant nursery in the Egyptian Sahara. The first step in that is windbreaks around and through the nursery, creating a sheltered, cool environment. This aspect of plant production has been largely lost in the modern world. The chocolate Nutella people found that out the hard way, says Rod Holcomb. Thank you, Rod. And from Rick Kemp, Ian, in Adelaide, Canberra and Sydney, the early morning benefits harvested from daylight saving have now gone, as the sunrise times have returned to those experienced when daylight saving starts. This year it starts on October the 6th, yet we doggedly persist through until April the 7th with darker and darker mornings under daylight saving. Only about a third of the world's countries bother with daylight saving, so why do we persist with this nonsense? Says Rick Kemp. This is the All Over News, and from Craig Dixon, he says, G'day Macca, Matthew Flinders and his good mate George Bass sailed the sloop Norfolk through what we now call Bass Strait. They went on to circumnavigate Tasmania, proving it to be an island and not attached to the mainland. Thank goodness, says Craig. Norfolk, under Flinders' command, also explored much of the Queensland coast. With HMS Investigator, Flinders, with his cat Trim, was the first person to circumnavigate and chart the Terra Australis continent, and he's credited with naming it Australia. Saturday, March the 16th, will be Matthew Flinders' 250th birthday. The Bass Flinders Maritime Museum in Georgetown, Tasmania, where the replica Norfolk is on public display, will be celebrating the event over the weekend of March the 16th and 17th. And of course, you all remember that the replica Norfolk was rebuilt under the auspices of the great Byrne Cuthbertson. Anyway, on the weekend of the 16th and 17th in Georgetown, there will be a dual cake cutting live with Donington in the UK. Of course, Donington was Flinders' birthplace. There'll be the tall ship Julie Burgess sailing into York Cove, wooden boat displays, talks on ships and navigation, museum tours, coffee and food vans, etc. Also, as you are aware, Ian, in 2019, Matthew Flinders' remains were unearthed from Euston Station, London. On July the 13th, 2024, his remains will be reinterred at a local church in Donington, that's Lincolnshire, the village where Flinders was born and raised. Three volunteers from the Bass and Flinders Maritime Museum, myself included, says Craig Dixon, have been invited to attend the reburial service. We have been afforded a special guest status to be in the chapel with other guests, limited to 300, says Craig Dixon.
G'day, Macca. This is Gavin from Mildura. How are you, mate?
Good, thanks, Gavin.
Hey, mate. Just popping, giving you a call to let you know about our change of plans for this week. Mother Nature has taken over again, and myself and along with about another 150 other mad speed enthusiasts, we're going to be heading up to Lake Geneva in the middle of South Australia to do the Land Speed Week, where we take motorbikes and cars and trucks and
and
try and set some records. But we got a shower of rain there last week, and so everything got cancelled, and we've packed everything up again for another year.
I'd love to go up there, and I think wasn't it last year that they had water and they had the trucks and water in the trucks or something. I don't know. Was that last year or the year before?
They had a shower again. But Macca, a quick one. Yeah. I changed my plans and went to Streaky Bay because my father and a mob of retirees, they all meet up in Streaky Bay each March, and because I had the holidays, I went over to visit Dad and catch up. And just to let you know that they were just a great bunch of people from all over Australia. They all get together, and it's just One guy was 86. He used to drive the train from Alice Springs to Darwin, and it's just an amazing group of people that they just converge from all over the country from the Streaky Bay to pretend they're going fishing. Yeah. And I think most of the time it's about catching up and having a chat and just meeting some wonderful, wonderful people from all over the world, over the country.
Good on you, Gav. Look, I'll see you in Lake Gairdner sometime. It'd be lovely to go there. I've got to fly, Gav, but nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Good on you, mate.
Last night I went to the Miracle Mile trotting championship at a place called Menangle, and there was horses and people from all over Australia there. It was won by a horse from Queensland called Leap to Fame. Grant Dixon drove that, but it was a great night. Big crowd, lots of people from all over the place. And I bumped into Lance Holberton. Come and meet Lance. Interesting fella, Lance is. I'm talking to Lance Holberton. Lance, you're from
Adelaide, South Australia.
And you're over here at the pacing.
Yeah, at Menangle for the Miracle Mile.
And what's your claim to fame? What do you do?
Claim to fame, I've retired, Macca, 40 years with the government as a quarantine inspector. And now just I work at the horse sales. It's a bit of a hobby I've had since I was a kid. So we do, we work for APG.
That's Australian Pacing
Australian
Gold.
Pacing Gold. That's the standard bred sales, and also I help out at Magic Millions with the Adelaide complex.
And that's Jerry Harvey. And
yes, sir. Yes, Jerry. Jerry's the boss. We've got a sale next weekend, or just next Monday, Tuesday, the following Monday, Tuesday, for about 427 horses in Adelaide.
So you grew up with horses, I suppose, did you, in Adelaide? Whereabouts? In the hills?
We grew up on the beach in Semaphore Park in Adelaide. My dad used to train 150 standardbreds, and at the back of our place was Colin Hayes, so we all sort of grew up down there on the beach.
Famous, isn't that? That's where Bart's from, Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Cummings from down at Glenelg. Mm. Yeah, Bart's great saying was the Glenelg Council come and said to him, "Mr. Cummings, you've got too many flies." He goes, "Well, how many am I allowed to have?"
How many should I have?
Yeah. That's right. So that's his great saying. So, yeah, I'll never forget it.
So you worked in quarantine for 40 years?
Yeah, I worked with South Australian Biosecurity, PIRZA, and we looked after some all sorts of things. Fruit fly outbreaks. South Australia hasn't got fruit fly, so we worked with the South.
You always see the signs when you drive along the highway.
Yeah, don't take any fruit in the South Australia, because it's a fair fine for it now. With that, and also we had the last job we done was we had a weed at Murray Bridge called Bryant's Broomrape. It's a parasitic weed that's nowhere else in Australia.
Did you get rid of it?
No.
That's the trouble with all the ferals, isn't it?
Yes, it
animals
is.
Animals and plants.
They just keep going.
The latest one's the fire ant, I think.
Fire ant, New South Wales has sort of really stepped up with the fire ants, and Queensland. So, it's good to see they're doing something about that.
So, Lance, does that include locusts and grasshoppers and things like that?
Yes, we used to work on the locust program up around Hawker, Blinman, up through there. And, the locusts used to come down, hit the New South Wales border and just head straight for South Australia, straight to sea. So, they'd go through and then come out probably around Cowal that way and go out. The snapper love them. They just fly straight out to sea, and the snapper are waiting for them as soon as they hit the sea, Macca.
Really?
Yeah.
Have they worked out any of the life cycle of the and when they're going to arrive? It just doesn't seem to be any plan. You never know.
No, they know when they're coming down. The monitor, the locust program monitors as they leave Queensland. They get down to New South Wales, and when they lay, and then the following year, they march on back to South Australia and just head straight to sea.
Maybe we should talk to the snapper first, they probably know when they're
coming. They probably know more, Macca.
It's like when the pelicans go out to Lake Eyre because they know it's full.
Yeah, a great area to work up in there, Macca, and just great people. Mm. You can't beat country people.
So you retired, but you thought you'd still like to work, so you're mucking around with horses.
Macca, I train horses as well in Adelaide, so we have about four or five horses. It's just in your blood, you just can't get away from it.
Mm. So where do you live?
In Adelaide.
Whereabouts?
Globe Derby, right behind the track, Macca.
Oh, right.
So it's the trots here every Saturday night, so we've got trots here, so it's always been in the blood, mate.
Lance, great to talk to you, mate.
Thanks, Macca. You do a great job, buddy.
Yeah, Paul Amos here. I'm the mayor at Coffs Harbour, Macca. I'm just ringing up to tell you about the activities around Coffs Harbour at the moment. Our big day today, and has been for the last few days, the Australian Touch football title. So
they're
televised on KO and brings thousands of people to Coffs Harbour. we're really becoming known as the place to have these events in the middle, halfway between Brisbane and Sydney. So we are the ideal place to have these events.
So this is Australian touch footy. So where are the teams? Just what, mainly New South Wales and Queensland, or are they from?
No, from all over Australia. In fact, they've changed their format a bit to fit in a few from overseas. I know Singapore's here, Japan's here.
Really?
So it is a big event. They have a all abilities competition where you've got people of varying abilities that can still participate. Great event, a great concept.
Is there, because it seems to me that PNG, they love their footy. I don't know about touch footy, but one of the reasons why they probably struggle playing against, say, Australia, because they're a lot bigger. The Australians are a lot bigger, and football is about bigness and size in lots of ways. But I reckon that if the PNG didn't have to tackle big, huge bloke, they'd be pretty, because they're pretty fleet of foot, aren't they?
Oh, great athletes, little tanks, and yeah, certainly they can hold their own. You see them, there's talk about them going into the NRL competition.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're handy, very handy.
Yeah, so they've got a team in the touch footy?
I'm not sure about New Guinea. You'd imagine if Singapore and Japan are there, they might have representation.
Yes, yeah. You'd think they would. So whereabouts, that's on in Coffs Harbour, what, all week or this weekend or what?
It's on all week for 3 days. As I say, it's televised on KO. We've got about 20 fields out at our international sports complex. So they've got the facilities there, probably 165-odd teams, and they'll be 200 teams next year, so it's growing all the time, and it's a big sport, this touch football. And Oztag comes here too, and again, they generate probably 20,000 odd people when they come for the weekend.
Yeah.
A big event for regional areas.
Yeah. Oh, it's great, and great to get together with people from other countries too, and for everybody, you know. I mean, I think that's the one. Sport brings people together, and it's not a big money thing like big corporate football. It's just people getting together and doing.
It's a lot of fun, and a rite of passage seems to be they come down to our jetty and they have the jetty jump. So you'll see thousands of people on our jetty jumping into the ocean. That goes with the whole deal. So it's a great day. Can I talk to you a bit about our jetty area for 2 seconds?
Yeah, sure, go.
Yeah, we're at the council at the moment. We're in a dispute with the state government with regards to our jetty area. We're trying to compulsory acquire that back. We've offered to buy it. It's not happening. The state government are doing the wrong thing by our community here, because it should be parklands, it should be restaurants.
What do they want to do?
They want to rezone it. So it's in for a rezoning now. So a rezoning controls what you can do with the area. That rezoning, they want to have residential. So in other words, they want to take away this potential parkland and put in a small suburb in many respects.
Well, you can
it's a horrible idea.
You can understand why, mate, because I saw the statistic the other day. There's 1,500, that's 1,500 people a day coming into Australia. 1,500 people a day coming into Australia.
Yeah.
So you can understand. But nobody ever talks to us about it. It's just we just have to deal with things like you do there in Coffs Harbour and all over Australia. Councils are, and they've got no clout. It's governments all over, and nobody's ever asked about. And you know, if you've got 1,500 people a day coming into Australia, it's no wonder people can't get into housing. And so that's why the push is on, mate. And we're all a loser, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. The push is on, but it can be counterproductive, like in this instance. As you say, when you're stacking them in, you must provide breakout areas with that.
Exactly.
So, big problem.
Good on you, Paul. Great to talk.
Thank you, Mackie. Great job. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
There's Paul here, mate, truck driver.
Hi, Paul.
Yeah, mate, just thought I'd ring up, give you a bit of a weather report and traffic report.
Mm-hmm.
And say hello, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Good on you, Paul. Where are you and what are you doing?
I've just gone through McLean, I have in New South Wales.
Mm.
And they're just driving through past all the cane fields and having a bit of a look, taking some machinery up to Cairns.
From?
From Victoria in Melbourne.
Uh-huh. That's where you're from?
Yeah, I'm down in Gippsland. I am. It's a little bit warm down there today, so I thought I'd get out of there.
Well, that's a big run. That's a fair while. Do you say Cairns you're going?
Yeah, up to Cairns, up to one of the mines up there.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so yeah, we drop this off and grab a backload and come back down and do it all again.
Well, we need people like you, mate. Apparently, truck drivers, like everybody else, are in short supply.
Oh, they're always there, mate, but get a good one's a hard one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Knows what he's doing. That's the hardest bit.
Yeah, well, I suppose so, but it's like
anyone can sit there and drive a truck, but whether they can operate it properly, you know.
Yeah, well, it's like any business, anything you do, it takes a lot of skill and time to learn how to do it properly, doesn't it?
Yeah, mate, years on the job, just like your job, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, you get to see all. It looks like I'm going to get a windscreen watch in a minute. I know. It's a bit of rain around. I've had a few showers, and other than that, it's not a bad day. It's 26 degrees at the moment, and it's a little.
So how's things on the road? You're on the Bruce at the moment. Oh, no, not on the Bruce, but you will be on the Bruce Highway.
Oh, no, I'm on the Pacific at the moment still. I've got a few aluminium roadblocks in my way, but I know, caravans we call them, aluminium roadblocks.
Oh, dear, yeah.
But it'd be all right. They wouldn't be too bad if they all had UHF radios.
Yes, exactly.
You know? That's a bit of a hard thing, that one.
And the roads are, I was talking about the Bruce Highways in Queensland. I mean, people often complain about the Bruce because there's a lot of roadworks going on the Bruce from time to time, and that doesn't make it easy either, does it?
Oh, I think the worst bit at the moment is getting through the Gold Coast, mate, and that all the roadworks going through there, it looks like, I think they're just milking it, and that to make it drag out, I think.
Maybe, and there'll be a lot more, I suppose, because they've got Olympics in a year or four or five or whatever, but so there'll be a lot of work going on for that, I'd say.
Oh, it's madness up there at the moment, mate. The amount of people that are moving to Queensland and into the Gold Coast area, it's just crazy.
Mm. And whereabouts in Gippsland do you live, Paul?
Oh, down near Bairnsdale.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and just a bit inland from Bairnsdale, and yeah, it's the... I used to live in Melbourne, and I decided to get out of Melbourne and moved into the country. And yeah, it's the best move I ever made.
Yeah, people say that because our cities are getting very big. They're very big, and some would say overpopulated. But when you look around the world, they're small, I suppose, when you look at Jakarta and Mexico City and all of the big cities around the world. But I'm not sure that we all want to live in huge cities. But people say that about moving out, the old tree change.
Yeah, well, driving a truck, mate, you get to see a fair bit and all the different cities and around Australia, like Perth and Darwin and Cairns and Brisbane, all them places, you know, and everyone's in too much of a hurry, mate. That's what the problem is.
Well, it's part of the world we live in, I think, Paul, isn't it? I mean, that's the deal. It's the world we live in. Everything's, you know, there's an email, your phone buzzes, there's an email to be answered, and... it's the world you live in, and a lot of people don't want to belong to that world anymore. So they just, you know, I don't know how often you look at your mobile phone, but I try to look at it once or twice a day, but that's about all. But people have them in their hand all day.
Oh, yeah, no, that's crazy. I can't do it. You know, like if my phone rings five times a day, I feel like throwing it out the window.
Yeah.
It means I've got to be nice to too many people, Macca.
Yeah, and what sort of machinery are you carrying, Paul?
Oh, I've got a couple of excavators on at the moment, mate, just 2 8-tonners.
Mm.
And just go up to one of the mines, we'll dump them off, and I've got to pick a roller up in Cairns, and I think I'll bring that back down to Victoria and turn around and take a couple more back up to Cairns.
Yeah. All right, well, you're cooler up there than you would be in Victoria, mate, apparently.
Oh, mate, I've got a good aircon in the truck and a good bunk cooler. So, yeah. I just thought I'd ring up and say hello. I've been going to do it for a couple of years, but I thought, oh, well, I'm doing nothing at the moment. I'll ring up and say hello.
Well, I'm glad you did, Paul. Great to talk to you, mate.
Yeah, no, love your show, Macca. You keep me interested on a Sunday morning.
Thanks, mate. Good on you.
All right, see you, mate.
Bye. Terry's in Warwick Farm. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Mac and Terry Ryan from Chinchilla speaking. How are you?
Good, thank you. What are you doing at Warwick Farm, mate?
Mac, I'm down here at Warwick Farm for the Nutrien Equine Standard Bred Yearling Sales. They commence today at 11 o'clock.
Oh, that's right. Someone
yearlings.
Yeah, somebody was telling about that last night when I went to the Miracle Mile. Were you there last night?
No, I wasn't. Unfortunately, we had functions here at the complex where we are. Would have loved to have been there, but we had the big screen going, and oh, wasn't it a great win for Leap to Fame?
Leap to Fame, amazing stuff. Amazing stuff.
He looked to me, Macca, if the horse, there was never a chance of him getting beat. From when he left the gates, the horse was always going to be a winner, wasn't he? Beautifully driven, but he's a Queensland bred horse too, you know. And, yeah. Great all to right. see the Seymour family, Mr. and Mrs. Kev Seymour. They'd be very, very proud owners there today.
Oh, yes. And there was a piece in the telly, and I must compliment the telly and also the Herald Sun, because they tend not to do some stuff about pacing, and it's a bit like the English soccer. Once Ange Postecoglou gets to Tottenham Hotspur, all of a sudden we read much more about English soccer, which we always wanted to read anyway, but they had never had it. Just because Ange is there, now we're getting more about English soccer, which I prefer, and the same with the trotting. You never get enough information about it because there's lots of people like it, especially across country Australia. But
and we got 160 horses to sell here this afternoon, and glorious cattle. 160 horses.
How much is it going to cost me to get a pacer, Terry? Can you pick
one
up?
Oh, you'll be right. You come down. We'll fit your horse up to suit your budget, and we can probably syndicate him.
No, not
two of us go together.
Not my budget. You won't. But I mean, I was talking about this earlier this morning when we were thoroughbred racing. You know, they routinely see at the Easter sales. You can pay $500,000, $1 million, $2 million. What's the standard breeds like?
Oh, look, if we can average up today somewhere around about 25 to 35,000, we'll have a good day.
Mm-hmm.
Macca, I don't know what the market's going to be like, but I'm certainly sure we'll have horses in that 80 to 100, 120 or 30 or 40 or $50,000 mark here today.
And
there's a lot of outstandingly bred horses here. There's a lot of people looking at horses. So I'm confident we'll have a good sale. We have about 4 sales a year. We've just completed Brisbane earlier there this month. Sydney, then next month we go to Melbourne, then back to Bathurst. And of course, then all those yearlings, they are competing then for a final, which is run at Menangle there later in 25. So there's plenty of bonus races leading up to this, and it's a great opportunity and a great lot of fun too to own a horse with a few good friends.
Yes, and as I say, you can get into something like that. I was just talking to Danny Keady up there in Coonamble, and it's the same. That was racing and the same thing. They have a country championship, and I know that's big in pacing too, isn't it? Now they have country championships and all over the place. So, and it's good, and it's a very it's grassroots level stuff too, isn't it? And I think
that's right. You don't have to have a fortune in your pocket to get involved in this industry and have a lot of fun, and it'll pay its way for you. Did you witness last night the horse that won the Shetland race out there at Menangle?
No, I didn't.
Well, that little pony, he's stabled here at Inglis's sales.
Oh.
He won that by about 25 metres. Little champion he is. And we're going to use him today for the opening of our sale here at 11 o'clock. So we are.
No, I didn't see that, but I've seen it before. When I used to go to Harold Park, they always used to have the little trotters with the little kids driving. It's always a great sight. And then all of a sudden somebody would come from the back and win it. It was always great. I always loved it. Terry, what are you doing there from Chinchilla? Are you selling or buying or what are you doing?
No, I'm down here just helping the company run this sale here. I liaise with a lot of clients and a lot of clients on the phone to buy horses. I do try and sell a lot of horses that are passed in, but my main job is liaising with clients, buyers and sellers, and just overall the jackaroo running about and keeping it all happening, make sure it happens.
Terry, what would a horse like Leap to Fame, what would that have cost when Kevin Seymour bought him?
I don't know, to be honest with you, Macca, but it's probably one of those dreams to come riches to rags shows. Probably a horse never cost a lot of money, but I don't know. But holy hell, you'd want some money if you went to buy him today off him, I'll bet you.
Like Takeover Target, cost $1,200
right.
or something.
Yeah,
That's the ideal story for me, mate.
Yeah.
All right, Terry.
Shame you never had the time to come here this afternoon. You'd enjoy it, having a look about here. There'll be plenty of people here that know you and you'd know them. Everybody knows, Macca.
Yeah, of course. I'll see what I can do, Terry. I've got some work to do here because I've got to go away. But you keep in touch and I'll come sometime. I'll come down to Melbourne or something. When's the Melbourne one?
The Melbourne one, that's on the 13th of April.
All right, I'll see how we go. Good on you, Terry.
It'll be a great day for you. 13th, 14th of April, Macca.
All right, mate. Good on you. Lovely
talk. Thank you very much, Macca. Bye-bye.
See you, mate. Bye.
been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.